It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone!
Swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, Frank Lee, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Hey-o! Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 83. Episode 83, if you're listening on Drop Day, it's June 20th, and it's the Brennan Bernardino episode. It's the first, real player that we've had for an episode in forever, and it's fitting. Because this is the official podcast of Boston being back, baby. It's Title Town. We are back where we belong. The Celtics are the champs. We've got gear. Sammy's got the official shirt. I've got the official hat. Pat, what gear are you picking up? Tell me you're getting something.
I'll probably grab the hat. This is the first championship hat that I've actually enjoyed. So I'm going to get the hat.
See, I like the hats because usually, and this is such first world discussions here, but I have the Patriots most recent Super Bowl hat and I have the Red Sox most recent World Series hat, and it's they're floppy hats and they fit my head weird. These ones they almost fit your hat like a nice Mitchell and Ness hat. I don't know, if you're watching on YouTube, these things are sleek as hell. I love it. But this is also the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, before we talk about the Sox sweeping the Toronto Blue Jays, hit that subscribe button, whether you're on the Apple, Spotify, or the Odyssey app. Hit that subscribe button, rate us 5 stars. It helps us out a ton. Go to the YouTube channel, the WEEI YouTube channel, where you can find our Play Tessie playlist and hit the thumbs up on those videos. Make sure to check them out. They're great stuff on YouTube. You can see our pretty faces and all of our championship merchandise. Remember, hit us up on the socials as well, at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy and Pat. The Sox are 40-35. They just swept the Blue Jays. They won 8 out of 10. They're on a streak in which they've won 8 out of 10. They won against the White Sox in the last game. Then they took 2 out of 3 from Philly. Then they took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. And then we talked about building. That's what we talked about in the last show, was just building. This was kind of an inflection point here. The Red Sox, when Verdugo pimped that homer and they lost that game, it was, what are you going to do about it? And they won the next 2 games, and that's how they punched back there. Then it was, the Red Sox have been hovering around 500, up and down, above it, below it, at it, for pretty much the entire season. Were they going to take advantage of this opportunity to build on it with a Blue Jays team that, I don't want to call them, maybe they are kind of wounded. They're a little bit wounded. They're not playing very well. Their pitching is okay, but their offense, they had guys out there that I feel like I'd never heard of, multiple. They had like that classic, last 4 guys in their lineup, and their batting averages are all in the 100s. They were ready to be beaten, and the Red Sox took advantage. They got that sweep. They're 5 games above 500, and life is good, man. It feels good to be a Boston sports fan right now. Sammy, how are you feeling, man? Celtics are champs. Sox are on a roll. Life is good.
And for the last few days, and by few days, I mean 2 days, I've been listening to all the ESPN pundits just squeal about how wrong they were about the Celtics and everything. So it's been fantastic. And of course, on top of that, the Red Sox are kind of quietly catching fire in the background of the Celtics. We said last week, after the Celtics lost Game 4, the Red Sox were like, look, you guys have been carrying the good vibes for Boston for a while now. We're playing the Yankees. Let us give you some good vibes, Celtics, after you took a loss. Red Sox did that, led to the Celtics winning the championship. You could basically make an argument that the Red Sox assisted the Celtics in winning their championship. What an amazing time to be a Boston sports fan. It's just it's so hard to describe the feeling in the city. And for Gordo and I, we live I'm kind of right outside the city. Gordo, you are directly in the middle of the city. It's just a different feeling when a team is in a championship and then of course, wins the championship. It's unbelievable. And then for us, crazy Red Sox people, the team is hot. So yeah, man, life is good. Other than these championship t-shirts, I gotta, if you're planning on buying one of these, the official ones, I got a medium. I can wear between a medium and large for shirts. I'm normally go medium, sometimes large. I got a medium. This is like a double XL, and I washed it, shrunk a teeny bit. But if you're planning to buy one of these Celtics championship t-shirts, get a much smaller size than you normally do. You're welcome for that. Put a bow on this rambling rant. Yeah, feeling really good. It's been a while since we felt like this, so enjoying it.
Pat, for you, man, first of all, just tell me how you felt after the Celtics won. But you got to tell me if you're buying into the Red Sox five games above 500. But start with the Celtics, man. Give me your take.
I'll start with the Celtics. I got to tell you, I had the biggest shit-eating grin on my face watching Kyrie dap up the Celtics team like he was like leaving a party. And then being unseen until he went on Twitter all of 15 seconds later. That was awesome. Not as good as winning the championship, but it was awesome. It was pretty cool. And then, I mean, dude, like, how are you not feeling good about the Sox right now? They've won 8 of their last 11. They've won 5 in a row in 6 of their last 7. Like, on fire. The offense is playing well. The pitching was kind of on the downslope for a bit. They've kind of figured it back out. Bullpen's doing great. Tristan's on his way back, hopefully soon. Romy's back. We're on the come up, dude. Boston's
Thick Willie, man. Thick Willie, 2 home runs Thick today.
Back, baby.
Triple A. Yo, Pat, did you guys, and Gordo too, do you guys see the video of, I think ESPN posted it, of Kyrie? We'll get to the Red Sox talk in a moment, but we got to cover this. We just won a championship here in Boston. I think ESPN posted it, and it was kind of like a ball washing of Kyrie Irving, where it's like, well, he stayed on the court to dap up all of his teammates. He's a true leader. I thought it was so funny that he had to like 2 or 3 times wipe the Celtics championship confetti off of his face. Like, that was, I can't recall a city getting more like sweet revenge on one player other than Kyrie Irving. And the closest I could guess, I guess, is A-Rod.
Yeah.
2004, like spurning the Red Sox kind of sorta, and then go to the Yankees, and then you kick their dicks in and win the championship, break the curse. Everyone
That's
loves
a tough
you.
One. Because
yeah, I don't know.
It's I get it. A-Rod might be the next, but like the fact of the matter is, like, they swept Kyrie in the playoffs en route to a finals appearance 2 years ago. They won 13 in a row against the guy before he finally got a win off in, I don't want to say a meaningless game, because it certainly was not. No NBA finals game is meaningless, but it was a game. It was a 3-0 series lead to make it 3-1, and then proceeds to get blown out the next game. You lose in the final. Yeah, it's just, I feel like a breakup has never been more won in the history of sports breakups.
The other thing too, going back to the A-Rod Kyrie thing, the A-Rod sweet revenge was immediate. That it all played out that year, that 04 season. Oh yeah. I'll shut up for a second.
Oh, yeah. There's Kyrie. Yeah, White.
Seeing the confetti, that got me. When
it's so,
like,
funny. He's such a dickhead too. It's not like a guy who left and then he comes back and loses. It's a guy who left, talked a ton of crap about you, disrespected your, not just the team. He called fans like us. He called the Celtics fans a cult. Like, God forbid.
For
we
years,
have like diehard fans here. Sorry, Kyrie. You're used to friggin' like Brooklyn or Dallas, where they couldn't give a shit for half the year. But the difference between this and A-Rod is that was more, the A-Rod one was more Red Sox versus Yankees, right? Like, yeah, A-Rod, there was a different twist to it. This was like the whole crowd chanting, were we 5 minutes in? Fuck Kyrie. That was unbelievable. Yeah. Like, it was like, we hate this guy. He talks shit about the team, the city, and the fans over and over and over again. And then he tries to run it back, and then he talks shit again. It's like, dude, screw you. You lost the battle. You lost the war. You're a loser. We win. Goodbye.
The other thing too is the A-Rod revenge was immediate. Like, it all played out in 04, the slapping Bronson Arroyo's glove. Like, it all, this has been like just steps of revenge. Like, oh, we knocked Kyrie out of the playoffs. Oh, he's 0-10 against us. And then like 3 years after he leaves, beating him in the finals. it was just like the cherry on top of like the Revenge Sunday. It was beautiful.
Right. I agree. It was like a five round championship fight. The whole story is like a five round fight, like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Fifth round, Celtics land the haymaker. It's 3-0. Kyrie tries to get up off his back. Oh, he's starting to get up. And then boom, hammer fist to the head. Kyrie's unconscious.
Curb stomp into the court like Derek White's teeth in game five, or like more like Grant Williams when Joel Embiid curb stomped him into the ground. Was that last year? That was crazy. But I'm gonna take this opportunity to transition, because it's a beautiful transition on the topic of revenge. And I know you guys disagree with me that if there's no animosity, there is no revenge. But I want to talk about Justin Turner a little bit, because God, this is like the fourth time that a recently departed Red Sox, and I know the Red Sox swept, but Justin Turner had a hell of a series. He was 2-for-3 with a homer, 1-for-3, and then 2-for-4, having kind of a tough year, but comes out and really takes it to the Red Sox. And go back here. Who else? So we had Chris Sale shove it up their ass. You had Kyle Schwarber hit a home run on the first pitch and crush the ball the entire series. And then you had the Doogie first game revenge game. It's just, and it hilariously, the only guy who got the last laugh was Sale, because they I want to say, took both games in that series. But I don't know what it is about these guys who leave the Red Sox coming back or facing the Red Sox and just absolutely taking to them, especially a guy like Justin Turner, who's not necessarily having a very good year, but he looked like just like the Justin Turner that we knew.
I mean, yeah. What do you say? That's like the bat that we all wish the Red Sox had. We like Tyler O'Neill. He had a great series. He's kind of, I guess you could say, he's taken over that role. Wasn't supposed to be him. It was supposed to be Trevor Story taking over that three-hole right-handed spot, or I guess middle of the order right-handed hitting spot. But I know this isn't how it played out, but God, how great would it be if you could just swap Yoshida for Turner, balance the lineup, get a guy the fans like a little bit more consistent, doesn't need to rest his legs every day, even though one of the guys is 30 and one of the guys is 39. Yeah, I miss the guy, man. He felt like a perfect Red Sox, like in every way, shape, and form, and it was so quick, but it felt like he was here forever. What else can you say?
Yeah, and on the topic of swapping Yoshida, and you know, he had a huge hit in game in the second game of this series to tie it up at 2, like, but he for the most part has struggled. He has continued to struggle even since his return from injury. Having a nice little layoff would be good for him. Obviously, you want to give him more time to figure it out, but it's interesting to look at things like with Thick Willie probably coming back on Friday, and if not Friday, then definitely Saturday. Obviously, as you mentioned, hit 2 home runs. There's going to be some interesting decisions to make with the lineups. Like, you think Yoshida's going to get in there every day against righties, but if you think about it, is he?
Well, okay. Let me back up a little bit. And this kind of coincides with what you just brought up. You said Yoshida had an impactful hit, and it was. It was an impactful hit. Can't remember if it was to tie the game or take the lead. It was one of them, though. But
it's to tie.
It was to tie. Meant a lot. Nice hard hit single up the middle. I believe it was like 107 miles an hour. Like, he smoked it. Great hit. I put it in the chat, our little playtesting group chat right after that. And I said, like, great hit from Yoshida. When was the last time he had a truly impactful hit? And I'm not counting the home run that he hit against the Pirates to extend the lead. Like, that was, you know, nice hit. But this was a truly, like, game-changing hit right here. When was the last time he did that? And all four of us, none of us could recall when the last time he had a hit like that was. It had to be last year.
The Brewer series, right? It has to be the Brewer series from last year when he hit 2 home runs in one
game.
My
God, that was more than a year ago. No.
He definitely had something.
He had a stretch. Like, I'm a pretty big, like, I'm not a Yoshida hater. I think he can hit. I'm not a fan of the full profile. But he had some decent months last year, some decent stretches, you could say. But I can't remember when the last, like, really big, oh my God, Yoshida came through, good signing, Chaim Bloom. When was the last time we felt like that? It felt so foreign to me to celebrate him getting a big hit. Happy to see it. Just they're so few and far between. I'm not loving it. So,
yeah, and like the obvious issue, is that you would think, like, that question, when is the last time he got a timely hit? You would think that a guy with his profile, a guy who is bat to ball, he's going to make contact, he's going to put the ball in play. Those guys are the guys you want up in the big spots. Like, in theory, you wouldn't want a Tyler O'Neill who is a higher strikeout guy up in a big spot. You want the guy who's going to put the ball in play and make the defense do something. If you put the ball in play, you have a chance to get a hit. But it just, it hasn't been that way for him. And I want to talk about this lineup thing for a second, because obviously, like, they're already, even before guys come back, they're already pretty much, I'll put it nicely and say they're shying away from playing Yoshida against lefties, but against righties, let's say. So obviously Duran's going to play every day, so he'll be in one of the outfield spots. O'Neill, unless he's having an off day, he's going to play every day, so he's in one of the outfield spots. Against righties, Willier is definitely going to play. He's going to have an outfield spot. So now those are three outfield spots. So if you're going to get Rafael in there, he's going to be a shortstop. Now you're talking DH. Question for both of you guys. I want to just quick rapid fire here. Pat, you ready?
Yep.
Who would you rather have hitting against a right-handed pitcher right now? Is it Yoshida or is it Ref Snyder?
It's hard not to say Ref Snyder.
Sammy?
Probably Ref Snyder.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. And it does, obviously, like, the lineup's not going to be the same every day, but I'm just saying that, like, we're on, like, the precipice here of, and obviously when Costas comes back, now you're at the point in time where you're asking Yoshida versus Dom Smith. And
Dom Smith, who, by the way, very hot right now, underrated.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, Dom Smith is not necessarily, like, obviously he doesn't have any versatility and Costas is going to play every day at first base, but Dom Smith is not, like, he's played well enough where he's not necessarily a guy who you want to just DFA. Like, he can help your team. So then now you're talking left-handed bat and Dom Smith, left-handed bat and Masa Yoshida. Now you're having that conversation, even if Ref Snyder stops hitting against righties. So basically what I'm getting at here is, are we at almost at the point in time, and I really do wish we could give Yoshida a little bit more time, but, like, he's had a lot of time. Are we almost at the point where he's going to be straight up, like, coming off the bench, pinch hitting when a lefty comes out of a game? Like, I don't know. Like, how close to that are we?
Well, another thing, another guy you didn't even mention, Gordo, David Hamilton.
Yeah.
He's got to get reps too. I mean, sure, like, whatever, second base, but then you get into the Romy thing. Moss is pretty low on the totem pole.
And Valdez.
Valdez, yeah. Valdez. Okay. Oh, you know what we should do? In lieu of, like, going up, we could go over the sweep all we want. Everyone's going to be talking about the sweep. We know the Red Sox dominated. Let's discuss this. Let's dig into this, because Yoshida is the one who's under contract. Yoshida's the one who's getting paid. How many guys are you playing over him? And Gordo, I know you just mentioned these guys. O'Neill, no. We're not playing Yoshida over him.
Duran. Willier,
no. Duran, absolutely not. Sidon, you need the defense. And now you're in the Ref Snyder territory. It sounds like we're going with Ref Snyder over Yoshida as a group. You know, and that's not me, like, absolutely Ref Snyder, but slight lean towards him. He does a little bit more. I know he's better against lefties, but against righties,
he's had a good year against righties.
Yeah, he also gives you better defense than Yoshida, more versatility than Yoshida, a little bit more speed than Yoshida, probably similar power to Yoshida. And then you have guys like Smith, who we just mentioned.
Valdez,
Hamilton, Romy Gonzalez. Dude, I'm getting into Romy Gonzalez territory where I'm like, I'm not there yet.
What about Vaughn Grissom when he returns?
Well, that's the next discussion. That's the next discussion is,
so Vaughn Grissom, here's the problem is both of these guys, Yoshida and Vaughn Grissom, incredibly different players. They have pretty much nothing in common other than playing for the Red Sox, but they're both under contract for the foreseeable future. One of them is a kid, Vaughn Grissom. The other one is 30.
With 3.5 years left on his contract.
Right. Which is less than Grissom, by the way.
Yes.
It's so hard for me to talk myself into playing Yoshida over any of these guys. And this is not me saying, like, this Red Sox team is not going to do anything. Do I think they're going to make the playoffs? You know, it they have a shot, but it's not super likely. This is still kind of a bridge year. We can't lose sight of that. I know they're hot right now. It's still kind of a bridge year. Therefore, it's hard for me to justify playing Yoshida over any of these guys. And I know he's under contract, but like this start is starting to feel a lot like David Price, where he's a guy that you offload, pay the money just to clear the roster spot and move on. And it's unfortunate because I think the vast majority of Red Sox fans really liked Yoshida when he got here. We liked the story. We love the World Baseball Classic, the friendship with Ohtani. It was all really fun, and he's got a good personality. He's funny. He can't dance, but he tries. He has the weight. It's just...
Whatever happened to that?
It's just...
They don't dance before the games anymore.
I don't know.
They haven't been for a while.
It's just the player is not enough. Can he hit? Sure. Yeah, he can hit a little bit, but that's it. It's not giving you pop, not giving you speed, certainly not giving you any sort of defense. The arm is a noodle. Like,
they're not even trying him out there.
Has he even played out there? Why do you play him? Why do you play him other than, I like what, I forget which one of you said it, but like a pinch hitting role right now this year, that might be how
Samuel,
I would
I'll answer
him.
Your question there. You play him because you saw what he was for like a month and a half, 2 months last year, and you want to get him back to that, because what that was a guy that we were all upset didn't make the All-Star team. But the truth of the matter is, and I know he's had an extended injury stretch here, but it's been a guy that just hasn't been valuable to you in pretty much any way. And like, I've been on the boat of try to make it work this year, and regardless of outcome, like, you're going to have offensive players coming up next year. Like, we talk about the big three, and like, those guys are coming, and maybe they sign another guy too. Like, he'll get pushed out next year and get you trade him in the offseason. To be honest with you, so many of these guys, like the David Hamiltons and Emmanuel Valdez's of this team stepping up, like, those are left-handed bats that I am more confident right now at the plate than Yoshida.
Yeah.
Those guys stepping up has made me kind of change my point of view here to, it's not even just about offloading the contract. It's about having a roster full of guys that are helping you. Yoshida being on the roster, not helping you in any way, shape, or form, it hurts your chances of making the playoffs. And
yeah,
if you're not going to make the playoffs, then you want to be able to play the younger guys.
Not only is he not helping you, but all those guys you mentioned, maybe other than Valdez, all of them can play the field, most of them multiple positions. Yoshida, they don't even trust to play left field. What is a less impactful position defensively than left field, especially at Fenway Park? And I know everyone's going to say, well, you got to know how to play the monster. Got to know how to play the monster. That's pretty much it. It's pretty much all you have to do to be a good left fielder at Fenway is know how to play the monster. And they don't trust Yoshida to do even that. And he had a full season to learn it. And still, the Red Sox are like, this guy fucking sucks out there. Like, we can't play him out there. Are you crazy? Put him in left field. And this is the same team that played Manny Ramirez and Hanley Ramirez in left field. Manny for a long time, Hanley for only 1 year. But like,
couldn't do Hanley.
what does that say? What does he do? So on top of the offense being good but not great, that his one tool is only good, he's also making Alex Cora's job harder, where he's constricting the roster in a way. You know, like, you can only play him as a DH. He's much better against righties, kind of sort of can hit lefties. It's just what he does is unbelievably niche. And the more time that goes on and the more young guys that come up and start performing, you're like, how do you keep this guy around? It sucks, but that's where we're at.
Yeah, I think so. And we've alluded to it a couple of times already. There's a real logjam now that's going to be 10 times worse next year. So let me pose this question. Let's say a borderline contending team calls, says, if you eat 80% of Masataka Yoshida's contract, we'll send you a David Sandlin type. Do you do that deal?
Done.
Yeah. Same boat. Yeah.
And I would do it. I would do it. And it's crazy because they were in a spot like a few weeks ago, we were talking about, oh, Masa's going to come back and he's going to boost this team. And since then, so many guys have stepped up. And obviously, like, these conversations can change if guys like Hamilton and Valdez cool back down. But I'm at the point where I would make a trade like that today. Like, yep. Today or at the trade deadline. Like, I'm at that point. It's okay, and to be honest with you, it's not even just a thing about Masa. It's more it really is just about all the other players on this team.
How about this? Because this is what might happen. Would you do that trade where you're kind of dumping Masa and his contract for very little just to get him out of here? Would you do that if it were in the Kenley Jansen trade? So let's say hypothetically they trade Kenley to, let's just pick the Phil or the Dodgers. Pick the Dodgers. They got a ton of money. They don't give a fuck about anything. And they're also weak in the outfield. So this actually kind of makes sense. They also have Yamamoto and Ohtani, the Japan connection. So hypothetically, Dodgers need a closer and outfielder. Red Sox go, okay, cool. Here's Kenley Jansen. We're also going to throw in Masataka Yoshida. He's an okay bat, not a good defender, makes pretty solid money. The return is going to be light, though. We're not asking for much in return. We just want you to take Yoshida's contract, and then Kenley is the bonus for you. Would you guys be okay with that?
Listen, whatever they like, if their means of offloading Yoshida is, and especially if they're not in a position to contend come the deadline, and like obviously like it gets harder and harder to have conversations about them selling off pieces, maybe outside of Kenley Jansen, who as well as he's played, I still think their most likely way to be able to add players is to decrease salary there, just because I still do not believe that ownership is willing to add payroll. But if their means of offloading Yoshida is to trade a rental guy and you can save money that way, I think you have to do it. I really wish we didn't have to have conversations like this, because we never used to. But the fact of the matter is that's the ownership group you have now. You have to find ways to free up dollars.
Well, I was going to say, I think if we were talking 6-7 years ago, what I said they would have done, I think they would have acknowledged the logjam, get this guy out, we'll pay whatever to get him out of here. Now we're in this kind of like pseudo budget maintaining bullshit. I think Sammy's approach is probably what the realistic idea is here. You attach him to a Kenley, you attach him to something of higher value,
O'Neill,
and get nothing back. Like, I think that's what their approach is going to be.
It's like, because like I feel Yoshida, you guys said it, 3.5 years of control left, and it's not by any means cheap. I want to say he's at $18 million a year, if I'm not mistaken.
It was 5 for 90.
So yeah, I mean, right there, that is so much money. And like to offload, I mean, let's say if the Red Sox could offload like $10 million of that per year, that's like $30+ million if you did it in the offseason. You have to attach like a pretty damn good prospect to do that. But if you get creative, you attach a player. So now not only are they getting, like we'll say in, for the sake of discussion, Kenley Jansen, they're getting an outfielder in Yoshida who they've seen perform in the past, and maybe they think a change of scenery, maybe they think they can make some adjustments to his swing or his approach and unlock him that way. So you're getting two big league players, and the Red Sox potentially add in a lower tier prospect as well to get maybe a little bit more salary off the books. Not like low in terms of like 33, like, I don't know. It's hard to, because there's literally so many ways you go about it, but like the Red Sox maybe 15 to 20th ranked prospect. Like, how much money could you get eaten off Yoshida if you sent Jansen and a prospect in the 15 to 20 range?
I think the thought should more so be like getting Yoshida off the books rather than what's the return we're going to get. Because I already don't think the return for Jansen, who's 38 years old.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Look, he's had a good season, I know, but he's on an expiring contract. He's a lot older and he's a one inning guy. So I don't think a return is going to be great. I think if the Red Sox can tack on Yoshida, Tim, in the hypothetical that I just presented with the Dodgers, because I think they make the most sense, I think you do that. And I know people are going to hate it. They're going to be like, well, you're getting nothing back. This is cheap. This is what the Red Sox are like now. I hate it too, but it's what they're like now. We got to deal with it. And if you can get a team to take Kenley, a team that needs Kenley, I should say, that will also be willing to take Yoshida, I think, unfortunately, you got to do it.
Yeah. You're muted, Gordo.
Shit. Big sneeze.
By the way,
Big
sneeze. Yeah, I sneezed. Sorry. Shoot me. God. Ugh. If they ate, like, I would, a creative way to do it would be, we'll eat Kenley and Yoshida money this year. The Red Sox eat money this year, but you take on future money. So it's like, you can have Kenley and Yoshida and you're not even really adding very much money to your books this year, but you have to eat like $13 million a year of Yoshida for the next 3 years. That's how you do it.
Yeah. I think the other thing too is, come deadline season, Kenley's going to be the biggest name closer on the market. he will not be the best closer on the market if Miami makes Tanner Scott available. So the King's ransom in that scenario is going to Miami, and you're getting a decent price on Kenley from the runner-ups, but it's not going to be some crazy return. And I think if it's not some crazy return, then you do your own self a favor and you get as much money off the books and bad contracts as you can.
Yeah. That's the unfortunate truth of how the Red Sox are operating nowadays. And to be clear, this is not, I mean, if it were up to me, I'd say, screw that, keep Yoshida, whatever. He can hit off the bench, trade Kenley, get the best return. You're the Boston Red Sox. You can do that. And that's the truth. But they don't operate like that anymore. So we gotta, as fans, come up with so sad. We gotta come up with hypotheticals where we're working between the margins. We're basically like unpaid employees for the Red Sox. God, fuck. All right, I don't want to get all riled up.
It's having a discussion like this is strange because, God, their approach at the deadline financially and how they're gonna approach potential Kenley Jansen or Masa Yoshida trade situation depends so significantly on what their playoff odds are at that point, what their record is at that point, how many games back they are at that point. I mean, the way like our discussions on this, the tone in which we have them changes every single time we have it, because there was a time where the Red Sox were, where we would record and the Red Sox were a game under 500 and they looked like they were middling. Now, when we're having these discussions, we're thinking in terms of them potentially adding other pieces, freeing up roster spots for this year to potentially make a run at things while also keeping in mind future years, because they said, and they have continued to say, like, we're not going to sacrifice future wins to win games this year. But I really do think that there are paths to benefit both. It's like, I'm not even saying necessarily the Heim Bloom. Maybe I am kind of saying the buy and sell thing, but I believe in their pen depth so much that even though Kenley Jansen's a lockdown closer, I just don't think necessarily that trading Jansen and making maybe like Justin Slayton your closer is going to kill you that much. Any final thoughts on this before I move us to a couple other topics before we preview the next one, before the next series? Okay. I want to talk quickly about the pitching in this series, just mainly the third game. We could stick it to Bay, because we know Hauk was not at his best in the second game. He talked about it on Nesson. Like, he felt like his stuff was flat. He gutted it out, still ended up keeping them in the game. Like, good for him. And Nick Pivetta had he completed seven innings. That's a good start in the first game. But Bayo in the third game was so fascinating to me, because I thought this was one of I thought he looked about as bad as we've seen him from, like, a standpoint of all the things we talked about: commanding your pitches, not throwing uncompetitive pitches, good pitches in full counts. Like, his stuff was crazy because he was throwing upper 90s and his shit was moving. But if you're going to hit two batters and walk two batters and put 10 batters on base in the first four innings, you're going to have trouble. And the dam just never broke. And Lou was talking on the broadcast in a positive way about it. Like, hey, Bayo in the past has let these things snowball, and he is like, if he has a bad inning, it kind of leads to him not really looking like himself the rest of the start. I don't know. I just expect so much better from him. Like, I don't want him putting multiple guys on base every single inning, because that dam breaks, and it didn't break today. But if he keeps doing that in future starts, it's going to break.
Yeah. You know how every time Bayo had a subpar start, we would kind of find a way to find the silver lining and be like, yeah, okay, he gave up four runs in six innings. However, it all came in one inning, something like that. This start, in a weird way, and I don't want to be negative, this start is kind of the reverse of that, where he had a good performance numbers-wise, but I didn't feel very good about it the entire game. It felt like he was walking a tightrope from, I think, almost every inning other than the fifth.
Last one, two, sixth. Three?
Sixth, okay. Yeah, it's just not a sustainable way to live. Is it good that he got out of it for the most part? Absolutely. Got some help from the defense. But it just seems like he spirals. Like Lou said, he often, when he gets into trouble, he'll get frustrated or something. And I mean, we saw him jack it up to 99 miles an hour. You ever see Brian Bayo throw 99? And I don't want to make it like it's a bad thing that his velocity is increasing, But to me, it seemed like he was clearly frustrated. He didn't know where the ball was going all the time today, Wednesday, as we record. But I don't know. It just wasn't the most inspiring outing from Brian Bello, despite the numbers and the win.
Yeah. I think the big thing with Bello, too, especially today, if he pitched like that against New York, Baltimore, Seattle, Houston, you're looking at 4 innings, 6 earned. I think you have to put it in the context of who he was pitching against. We already alluded to it. The bottom four in that lineup is nobody's. But yeah, it was a weird start. Like on paper, it was a good start, but he didn't pass the eye test.
That's the key right there. It's like it's the eye test. I mean, it was just a frustrating outing that results wise, like you'll take the results, but you have to understand that if he pitches like that next start, it's not going to be so kind. It's not going to be 2 runs. So we continue to want to see more from Bello. I think he's going to keep building on things. This is not me saying that I don't think he's going to be a good pitcher. I really do think he's going to take that step forward at some point. I continue to doubt that it's going to be this year. I think we're going to see a lot of growing pains, but it's going to be a start-by-start thing with him, man. We just got to keep looking for those steps, continue to look at that slider's development, and can he throw the sinker to lefties and can command it, command the changeup, command all his pitches. So we will keep looking for good stuff from Bello. Not in the next series, though. Last note before we pick an MVP of this series. Did it look like like Vlad Jr. was a little bit flirty today with the Red Sox to you guys? He was flirting, a little hair thing. Like, dude, how many times did he like giggle at the Red Sox dugout? Look at me, I cut my hair. Like, how many times did we see that with Valdez, with Bello? Waited until after his start was done.
Yeah, boys, man, they're boys. The guy, the guys like Dominican Republic crew. They're tight. They're tight. It's cool. They're like crew and everything. I don't think it was any different. He's always, you know, flirty with like Rafi, and I don't know. I know people want to fantasize about like Devers, Vladdy, Casas in the same.
I'll do that. I'll fantasize.
I don't know. Vladdy's not that good. Like he's good. He's kind of like Yoshida. He's like Yoshida, right-handed. A little more power, less contact.
And a lot more power.
Am I crazy?
A lot more power and a lot higher. Yes. I know.
Yeah,
he's
higher ceiling.
Compared to his expectations, he absolutely sucks.
But I'm mostly kidding.
He crushes that Fenway, dude, with that wall.
No, you can say that about anybody. Come on. I that's one of my.
Well, but look at the numbers. I wish I had them in front of me. Look at the numbers.
I have a lot of pet peeves. A lot of pet peeves. This guy would rake at Fenway. You could say that about 97% of right-handed guys.
It's not a wood, though. He does rake at Fenway.
I know, but most righties do. It's Fenway Park.
Getting this off my chest right now. I want nothing to do with Vlad Guerrero.
Oh, you guys.
I'm more on that side. I'm more on that side of this. There's so many dudes. If you want to big righty, get Pete Alonso or like fucking Lou Bob, my boy. He's
25 years old and he's already showing signs of a decline.
He's 25 years old. He's finding his footing. He's finding his footing, Pat.
He had 40 home runs. It's a 22-year-old Gordo.
His that ass makes point. Nicki Minaj jealous.
Development is not linear, guys. Gentlemen. It's not linear.
No, okay, Gordo. If they traded him for like friggin' Yoshida, ooh, sure.
What are these Fenway stats?
36 at Fenway. OPS of 1,013.
Oh my
OPS
God.
Plus of or TOPS plus of 141.
9 homers and 38 games started. Oh, and granted, yes. Anytime a visiting player has good numbers at Fenway or whatever, you can always attribute it to okay, what is the Red Sox pitching that he's facing, and throughout his career in particular, the Red Sox pitching has not been very good. This might be actually the first year of his career that the Red Sox have had good pitching. Am I wrong on that? Probably. When did he come up? 2019,
right?
Yeah, I mean, so you could attribute it to that, but I don't know. This is a guy who's definitely not the best version of himself right now, not the finished product. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him. He's going to get expensive, and he's really been bad. I don't think they should do the Cody Bellinger non-tender route because that obviously bit the Dodgers, and you can't really afford to just lose a guy for nothing, especially a guy that was that big for you guys. But, yeah, I don't know. I love Vlad. That's my guy. But let's pick an MVP of this series. God, they had so many good players in this series. I know who my vote's going to be. I Is it? We talked about it in the chat. Did I, have any of you guys changed your vote?
No,
no.
It has okay. to come out. I mean, the context of the series.
So I want to give a shout out to Sidon for having 2 3 hit games, because if you play 2 games in a series, you win both those games and you have 3 hits in both those games, including a clutch go ahead RBI single in the second game. It's hard to not give you the MVP. But how can you not vote for Tyler O'Neill? Hits the big home run to start game one and another one in that game as well. So 2 home runs in game one, and then hits the game tying home run in game two. I mean, that alone, like, what else do you even need? 3 home runs and 2 of them. One of them was a go ahead and the other one was a game tying. Like,
yeah,
good God.
Two out of 3 games, you probably don't win it without him. So
good way to put it.
Yeah. Or you might not win. So the second game not for sure, but more so the second game, you're probably not winning without him. He's the one who put you ahead. And then, you know, game one, 2 home runs. What are you going to say? He's the easy choice for MVP. But I'm glad you shouted out our guy, Sidon. He's been, he go from hitting 190 a month ago to now he's at 251. And I know 251 is not amazing, but it's really good. That's when you're crazy. Also the friggin' greatest defender that anyone's ever seen. So justice for Sidon.
Pat, you feel good about O'Neill?
Yeah, no, I'm sick with O'Neill.
I want to pull up something that I tweeted about. It's Sidon Rafael. It's just because I know O'Neill's getting the award. Like, congratulations, Tyler O'Neill. You are the Play Tessie Series MVP for the Toronto Blue Jays sweep, the Red Sox sweep of the Blue Jays. But just going to quickly rattle off Sidon Rafael, his last 7 games. He sat the last game in the series. He's gone 2 for 3, 2 for 4, 1 for 4, 3 for 4, 3 for 4, 2 for 3, 3 for 4. That's 16 for 26 and a 6.15 average. And he hit the go-ahead single in the 8th inning of game 2 to win that game. So shout out to those guys. But Tyler O'Neill, if you're going to bomb like that in your home country, nonetheless, you are the Play Tessie Series MVP. Any other thoughts before we preview Cincinnati?
Tanner Houck, again, not his best outing, still friggin' nasty. I love watching him pitch. It's a pleasure. And I love this interview today as we record on Wednesday, how he was talking to Jamai, and you could tell he was not psyched with his performance, yet he was still solid. So that's our budding ace that we all love.
Go Tanner. Yeah. Tanner Houck. But you will not see Tanner Houck in this series. We'll preview that and explain that in a second. The Red Sox are going to Cincinnati on a happy flight to face the Reds. The Reds are 35-39. They're in last place in the NL Central. They just dropped 2 out of 3 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. They did have a 7-game win streak from June 2nd through 8th, but they are 3-6 since that stretch. So they've come back down to earth. This Reds team was supposed to take a big step forward this year. They really haven't. Game one, you've got Cutter Crawford versus Andrew Abbott, a good young pitcher there. Cutter's got a 3.54 ERA coming off a 6-inning, 3 earned run outing with 9 strikeouts against the Yankees. Andrew Abbott has a 3.42 ERA coming off 5 innings of 3-run ball with 3 strikeouts against the Brewers. Second game, Nick Pivetta versus Frankie Montas. Nick Pivetta, 3.88 ERA coming off 7 innings of 3-run ball and 4 strikeouts against Toronto. Yeah, one of you guys got... Is that me or is that you guys?
What?
I'm like hearing some noise. It might be you, Sammy. Mute yourself for a second. Let's see it. Yeah, it is. That's Sammy.
Does it sound like water?
Yeah.
Okay. This is so embarrassing. My cat has a water fountain.
Oh, boy. Wow. Larry Legend. He's living large.
Let me shut it off real quick.
All right, I'll keep previewing. Frankie Montas, the former Yankee, has a 4.62 ERA, and he's coming off 5 innings of 3-run ball and 5 strikeouts against the Brewers. Third game, the Red Sox could have had Tanner Houck start this game, but they are pushing him back a day. It's for Houck, right, to push him back a day to get him some extra work. Yeah, Sammy, the noise is gone. You're good. So
stupid
the Red
cat.
Sox, yeah. The Red Sox are starting TBD, so for now we'll just assume Larry the Cat is starting that game. The Reds, it is also a TBD, but good feeling it's going to be Carson Spears. coming. He has a 3.2 ERA coming off a 6-inning 4-run appearance with 5 strikeouts.
Carson Spears? That sounds like you just made up a name.
It might be Spires. It's S-P-I-E-R-S. I don't know who it is.
Okay, hold
the
on.
Blue Jays had a few guys this week in the games that I thought were like creative players. This might be another creative player. Who's that reliever? I'm going to find that reliever that came in at the end of the game today.
Francis?
Yeah, Francis. Bowden Francis. That is not a reliever.
The same. That's so funny. I thought the same thing. I'm like, this is like a MVP baseball 2005, yeah. Kind of like you do a franchise mode and you draft him. You're like, who the fuck?
I was more fascinated by Zach Pop.
Yeah, Zach Pop.
Zach Pop.
Okay.
That was the name that got me.
Gordo, I got the pronunciation. It is.
Okay, what is it?
Carson Spires.
Okay, Spires, like
Mike Fiers.
Spires on the Mariners. Mariners, Gabe Spire, Mariners guy.
Yeah. They're going to face potentially that guy, likely that guy. So that's a creative player. So hopefully Red Sox can win that game, but we'll see what they do for their, if they're going to bullpen it. I don't know. Maybe we'll see. They optioned Cooper Criswell, and it kind of seemed like they were going to try to finagle their way through a nice little stretch here with some off days coming up and maybe go with a 4-man rotation. Doesn't necessarily appear like that's the case. So we'll see. Hitters in this series, nobody on the Reds with any amount of games played has an OPS of 800 or better. They've got Ellie De La Cruz, who everyone loves. He's got 12 homers and 37 stolen bases. It is June 20th on drop day, 37 steals, but he's got a 769 OPS after a hot start. He cooled, although he is a little bit hotter now. He's got an 836 OPS in his last 13 games. You got Jamer Candelario. They're kind of legit offseason move. He's had a solid year. He's got 12 homers and a 789 OPS, and he's got a 1027 OPS in his last 13 games. I just picked that guy up in fantasy because he's absolutely crushing it lately. And then just another name people know because we talked about him all offseason, Jonathan India. A lot of talk about him potentially getting traded to the Red Sox to be their second baseman this year. It ended up being Vaughn Grissom that they acquired instead. Jonathan India has a 681 OPS for the season. So let's get into some series predictions here. Joe, I want to call you in to give us an update. I don't think any of us had a sweep.
No. You and me, Gordo, had them winning 2 out of 3. Wrong there because they swept. Sammy was the pessimistic one. He said that they would lose 2 out of 3. So no one gets a point. And obviously, Pat didn't make a pick last episode. So Sammy's still in the lead with 9. Then you got Pat and Gordo tied for 2nd with 4. And then it's me in the basement still with 1.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize I was ahead by 5. Come on, fucking bums.
I'm going to keep going first so I don't cheat. All right?
Wait, no. Why don't you go last so that you can okay, go first. Whatever you want. You're in the basement. I want to cater to you.
I feel like
I'm in the basement, Sammy.
Sorry, Joe.
Joe, you want to make a pick?
Sure, why not?
Basement Braverman, that's what they call you.
One of the many nicknames. God, it's so tempting to say that they'll sweep Cincinnati, but I think Cincy's going to get a game out of this. I think they'll take the Saturday game because Sox don't lose on Sunday. Plus, they're rolling high and they're coming off a day on Friday. So I'll go again, 2 out of 3.
All right. I'm also going to go 2 out of 3. I think the one they drop is the first game. I really like Andrew Abbott. He's a really good up and coming arm, but I think Nick Pivetta is going to keep rolling. I think the Sox have seen Frankie Montas and we'll see him again and hit him again. I like him in the last game. They don't lose on Sundays, and Carson Spires is not a real human being, so they will hit him. 2 out of 3 for the Sox. Let's go Pat. Pat, what do you think here?
I think they sweep.
I love it. I'm glad someone picked that.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to sweep. I think the pitching matchups play in their favor. Even with that kind of skip a start, you're kind of going against whoever ends up starting that game will be better than whoever ends up starting for Cincy. So I think the pitching matchups are in their favor. And then on top of that, they're red hot. They took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees, 2 out of 3 from the Phillies, just swept the Blue Jays. I'm buying in. I think they sweep. But I want to mention the weirdest move of this entire offseason was the Reds giving Frankie Montas, who had not pitched in a year, $16 million. And the guy sucks.
Yeah, that ended up not – that ended up not – like, I thought they might be in the process of Sonny Graying it with him. I thought he might have a nice bounce back year. He had, like, a couple of good starts to start the year, and I was like, oh, shit, like, they did it. And then, nope, they didn't.
Yeah, no, I'm going sweep.
All right, Sammy, what do you think?
I got Red Sox winning 2 out of 3. I think they lose the Pivetta start. Pivetta is very home run prone. The Reds ballpark is a home run band box. Would love a sweep, but I'm going 2 out of 3, which is still very good. The Reds, I know they've a little bit underachieved, but for me, that was the team I thought was really going to take off. Guys like Ellie, Encarnacion, Strand, Candelario, like you mentioned, Gordo. Losing Matt McClain probably hurt a lot. That kid is really freaking good. Tyler Stevenson, friend of Zach Kelly, I believe. They had the sauna bet.
Yep.
A lot of talent on that
team. TJ Friedel, he's good. He just came back from his injury maybe a couple of weeks ago.
TJ Friedel was my pick to decline this year, to be totally honest. Because if you look at his metrics, it was kind of, he had a lot of good luck. But Jake Fraley, good.
Did he get hurt?
I think so. He's like a 2020 guy. People don't know that. He's like a 2020 kind of guy. Oh, I could go on and on. The pitching, Lodolo, Abbott, who we talked about, Hunter Green.
Yeah, very, very lucky that they're not facing Nick Lodolo. That guy is good.
And he hits a lot of batters. He's like a wild man. They also have a nasty closer, Alexis Diaz, brother of Edwin, the trumpet guy. If you're like, yeah, 2 out of 3. Red Sox take the series.
So we've got all you, Sammy, me, Big Brave Dog take 2 out of 3. Pat's got the sweep. Ball flies in Cincinnati. So this is a good series for a quick segment here. Pat, what are we doing here?
Crystal bomb.
Bomb it.
Bomb it. Braveman, can we get a score update?
We not only get a score update, we got history being made for the first time ever. Every crystal bomb pick was successfully picked. Obviously, Pat, you're not in the party, so forget you. the three guys that went deep, obviously Tyler O'Neill crushed two of them, or three of them, I should say, in this series. So Gordo gets another point. Jaron Duran sent one over the yard. Sammy gets another one. And I got Enmanuel Valdez, who absolutely socked one into the third deck of the Rogers Center. So all three of us get a point there. Standings remain the same. Gordo in the lead with 11. Sammy in second with 8. Pat in third with 3. But watch out, Pat. I'm coming for you, even though I'm still in the basement with 2.
I want to make a comment here. I think it's bullshit. Sammy said Jaron Duran was going to scrape one over the wall, and he hits one like to the fucking moon. And then Tyler O'Neill hits 3 homers, and we get the same amount of points. It's bullshit.
I don't make the rules, Gordon.
Oh, God.
All right, I've had mine for 2 weeks. I know who I'm taking.
Go for it then, Sammy.
Do it.
I'm taking Captain Canada, Tyler O'Neill. He's faced these Reds a million times during his times with the Cardinals, same division, National League Central. Tyler O'Neill, he's hot, too, and expect him to be on fucking fire heading into the series. Tyler O'Neill, I feel supremely confident about it. He might even hit 2 home runs this series. Book it.
I like it. I like the pick. I could go next. I'm going to take Jaron Duran, and I'm annoyed because this actually happens every single time that I take Jaron. I decide it like in the third inning or whatever of the third game in the series. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to like, look, whatever, making this pick. And then he hits a home run that game, and it looks like I'm just tailing him because he hit a home run. But the ball flies in Cincinnati. He is the type of guy who's going to make good, hard, solid contact, going to crush a ball. It's not going to look like it's hit that high off the ground, going to scrape over the wall. I sound like Sammy last week, but it's going to happen. Jaron Duran, second consecutive series with a home run coming right up.
All right, I can go. I have not got a crystal bomb. This is... I'm the one who MCs this segment. I've not got one right since Rob Refsnyder's first game in Pittsburgh. I'm due. I'm going Raffy. Raffy has to hit one in Cincinnati. 325 to right field. Ball flies there. He hasn't hit. It's Raffy. Raffy has to hit one. He has to.
Pat, if you just cursed Rafi, you're done, kid. But no, I like the pick. That's the smart pick.
Yeah, it was going to be my pick. But I'll go someone else. You guys just mentioned right field is very susceptible for hitters. How about someone we actually just trashed get himself a crystal bomb? How about Masataka Yoshida sending one deep?
Guaranteed. There's like no chance he doesn't hit a home run after all
he's
this. Like
absolutely
about,
hitting.
We a just home talked run about offloading his contract by wasting a trade asset at the deadline. So you can almost guarantee he's going to hit home run. Like he's going to hit like a 480 foot home run. It's going to be viral, and we're going to look like
idiots. Macho man is going to be dancing all over the bases.
Got Joe, a macho man.
You're an absolute genius for this pick. This is the smartest crystal. I thought Rafi against the Yankees was the biggest lock in crystal bomb history, and he didn't even hit a home run. This Yoshida after this episode is the biggest lock in crystal bomb history. Guaranteed. Great pick. But on that note,
I know the game.
So wait, to recap it, what do we have here?
So our picks, we got me taking Masataka Yoshida. Pat is going with Rafi Devers. Sammy with Captain Canada himself, Tyler O'Neill, and Gordo with Jaren Duran, the should-be all-star.
The will be all-star. Ridiculous. That voting was insane. I don't know if anyone has that on the Nuff set, but the all-star voting was absolute dog shit. The Red Sox fans could not get him into the top 20 amongst outfielders. But Sammy, we're not gonna fret because there's no losers in this next segment.
It's time for guys being dudes.
Yeah.
Joe, can we get a noise from you?
Yeah, bro.
There we go. Okay. All right. We got a new team on the horizon. We got the Reds and the Red Sox. You got to pick a player who played for both teams. Pat, you weren't here last week. My God, I feel like this happens to me once every like five episodes where I just can't talk. Pat, you go first. Who you got?
I'm going to go with the guy who, in my opinion, was the only man who stood a chance to hit the red seat in right field. Willie Mo Pena. 26 home runs, 66 RBI. His best season was in Cincinnati. Came over to the Sox. Immediate fan favorite. Willie Mo was the biggest outfield I've ever seen in my life. Like the biggest outfield I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he's dude, he answer was a quick he Willie Moe.
6'3", 260.
Jesus Christ. Quick Willie Moe story. Went to a Red Sox game. I forget what year. It was probably like 2006, whenever the hell he was on the team. I was sitting in right field. Someone hit a foul ball. Willie Mo Pena went to chase it down. It went foul. Willie Mo keeps running, picks up a woman's soda, takes a sip, puts it back down, runs back to right field. I was like, this is the coolest guy ever. That's my only Willie Mo Pena story, and I loved it.
I'll tell you, in MLB 07, the show on my old PS2, he's a monster.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like a bench guy when you look at like the CPU auto lineups.
Classic. Classic.
So question for you guys, because like now when we talk about him, like everyone reminisces and like, oh, I loved Willie. Did people love Willie Mo by the end, or was it only when he got here? Because no, I did not like Willie Mo.
I think people loved him. He and
struck
this is,
out every time.
I will battle to the death about this. He got a ton of leash because his name was Willie Mo. He had lovable name you've ever heard. His name's Willie Mo. How could you not like a guy named Willie Mo?
I was told he was going to be the next Ortiz when he got here.
Well, that's what your I was told. That's your fault for believing that.
No.
That's what I was told.
Why'd you believe that?
Dude, I was a kid.
I loved Willie Mo Pena, the spirit, not the baseball player. I loved the spirit of Willie Mo Pena. Yeah,
there you go. Gordo, I was in my mid-50s when Willie Mo Pena got to the Red Sox. He was never supposed to be the next David Ortiz. He was a guy who struck out a ton and hit home runs, and he could fill in at a few different outfield spots, and he was fun. That was Willie Mo.
So Willie Mo is the answer to a great trivia question that I'm not going to ask because I just told you that he's the answer, but he is the player that broke the back-to-back-to-back-to-back streak. He struck out after they went back-to-back-to-back-to-back.
I was at that game.
I was too. Where were you sitting?
My uncle's boss's seats. I was six rows from the Sox on deck circle.
Oh, damn. Okay. Jeez. I was sitting like in some deck in right field.
I was working my 9 to 5 back in my 40s back then. But Willie Mo, good one. Gordo, what do you got?
So this is funny. You can even see it on the show sheet. I wrote down two names because I knew there was a good chance that someone was going to take Willie Mo. I could see it from a mile away. So I'm prepared. I'm going with Ryan Hannigan.
Who nice.
I like didn't really enjoy him that much. I guess I don't really know why I made this pick. Really, the reason I made it was actually I'll do it as a trivia question. Can either of you guys name the player the Red Sox traded to get Ryan Hannigan? It was a one for one trade.
Who did they trade him to?
The Padres.
Padres. Xander, but I don't know. Tell us.
You want it? Will Middlebrooks, one for one trade.
Ooh.
Terrible trade. Fuck that shit.
I was so upset when that trade went down because, like, I loved Middlebrooks. Like, he was one of, I saw his debut. I was there for his first hit. Like, obviously, we love Will Middlebrooks now, but, like, back then, too, like, I was just like, it's like we're trading Will Middlebrooks for a backup catcher. He ended up playing 2 years and played 54 and then 35 games. OPSs of 664 and 468. Ryan Hannigan
great guy
did.
Though. Great guy. So, all right, last Hannigan thing. I don't want to stick on Ryan Hannigan too long. Do you guys know what his New England connection is?
No.
He went to Andover High School.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
Was he born here?
No, he was not. He was born in, I believe, Washington, D.C. or like the DMV area.
You are right. He was born in Washington, D.C., went to high school at Andover High School. That's crazy.
Yeah. So there was a little bit of a Massachusetts connection. An Irish kid named Ryan Hannigan.
He looks high in his baseball reference picture.
Yeah, I just got it. He looks absolutely cooked. This is a great picture of him. Makes me like him even more. Nickname is Hanny.
All right.
My turn. Last one. We talked a lot in spring training about spring training numbers. Gordo and I getting a little bit hypnotized in spring training by the stuff we saw. There's a lot of good examples of guys who are good in spring training and then don't really go on to do much else. And my guys being dudes fits that narrative. You guys remember Steve Selsky?
Yes.
He played for only two teams, the Reds in 2016. 54 plate appearances. He hit
hold 3, on, don't 14. Say it. Don't say it. Was he on the 18 Red Sox?
17.
Ah.
Yeah, he was on the 2017 Red Sox. So it was Cincinnati. He actually did a good job. Extremely small sample size. And like I said, 54 plate appearances, hit 314, 113 OPS plus, 810 OPS. It's a nice cup of coffee. Next year, comes to the Red Sox, tore it up. In spring training, a lot of people were talking about Steve Selsky as like a sexy roster pick to, you know, make the team out of nowhere. I believe he didn't make the roster initially, but he did get called up at some point. Only 9 plate appearances, 1 hit, hit 111, negative 16 OPS plus. So it did not go well for Steve Selsky. That was the end of his career. He was 27 the last time he played in Major League Baseball. Kind of odd considering, like, you know, his larger sample size was decent, that nobody gave him a shot. But yeah, Steve Selsky, I think he embodies the spirit of this segment. Guys being dudes, just random players that we may have forgotten about. That guy was Babe Ruth in spring training for a little bit, and now he's retired. Steve Selsky.
So basically what we have done here is we have the future Big Poppy in William O'Pena, Babe Ruth and Steve Selsky, and Hanny being Hanny and Ryan Hannigan. That is what we've delivered to you in guys being dudes.
The Reds and the Red Sox are churn out talent.
They are very red. This is a red series. Shall we do some Nuff Said? Does anyone have enough said they want to go first with? Pat? Yeah, let's hear it.
I don't know if you guys are looking at the show sheet. I switched my Nuff Said 3 times because every time I opened Twitter, I found something else I want to talk about. But this one gets the kick.
Let's hear it.
Joe Mazzulla, in my book, has solidified himself personally as a top 3 favorite Boston coach of all time.
Ooh.
I do love Joe Mazzulla.
Okay, so Belichick, Tito.
Yes.
But you like Mazzulla more than AC? Our boy AC? He fist bumps you. He's touched your hand.
AC might be my favorite ever. Maybe Belichick by default, just because like you have to.
I would go Belichick, Tito, Missoula, AC are interchangeable. So he walked down the north end with the trophy. That is not my nuff said. My nuff said is,
let him go.
He went on Zach Lowe's podcast, The Low Post. He said that he prays every night using rosary beads made from the original parquet floor.
What? I didn't see that.
Do you know how Boston you need to be to have rosary beads made from the parquet floor?
He's original, like, wait, Gordo, come on. You don't know what a rosary is?
Beads are the beads with a cross on it.
Oh.
You're not supposed to, like, a giant necklace, and then like the beads signify like a certain prayer that you have to do, and you have to do like the whole circle. And
you're actually not supposed to wear them, if I remember correctly. Yeah. You're like technically not supposed to, but everybody does. And this is your Jewish friend teaching you about Christianity. But, what's up? What's up? But
this guy has rosary beads made from the parquet floor. That's sick.
How did he do that?
I don't know. It's cool as fuck. This is like the most underrated storyline from the Celtics. He's from New England. He's a Rhode Island guy. Yeah. You hear him when he played for West Virginia, his interviews, he's like, yeah, we look good out there. I'm happy with how we fucking.
Yeah, he talks great. Those are so good. Him. I don't. Yeah. No. And he's like, I feel like so many people hated on him for so long, but now that he has won the championship, people are going to appreciate all the shit. Like, this is the guy who tapes his eyes shut when he sleeps.
And then he also went on Pardon My Take and said that like 6 years ago he had a dream board. The three pictures on it were the Larry O'Brien trophy, Brad Stevens, and the Celtics logo.
He's a psychopath and it's perfect. He's everything I've ever wanted.
The haters and losers, the haters and doubters from last year, Joe Mazzulla, totally justified. He was thrown into the mix. We didn't know much about him at all. And he's not calling timeouts. The team is underperforming. And then he figured it out.
But he's a first-year head coach. It's like okay, give him a year to figure out his shit. He got thrown into the fire. It's like people who were being impatient were insane.
No, he wasn't perfect. You can't say that. You cannot say people who were impatient were insane. This was the most win-now team in the league. It was not insane to question the coach. You just made the NBA Finals. And now you got a coach who's inexperienced. Totally justified, in my opinion, to question him and maybe want somebody else. I'm glad the Celtics stuck with him, though, because he's fucking awesome, and we love him now.
He is. I mean, it's so obvious how much the team has bought into all of the nonsense. I don't want to call it nonsense because it's not nonsense, but all the crazy shit that he does, showing, like, making Jason Tatum sit down and watch Batman with him, like
watching The Town like once a day. But he definitely was required to prove himself. It was totally fair to say that, and he did. What else can you say? So, anyway, I don't want to do too much Celtics. I know we're a Sox podcast.
Well, I'll go second because my enough said also has to do with the Celtics. I don't know how much publicity this has gotten, but if you've made it this far in play test, you deserve to know that on drop day, on the 20th. So if you're listening on drop day, it's today, 1 o'clock p.m. at the Raising Cane's on Boylston Street in Boston. Al Horford will be serving chicken.
Yes.
So, if you are a PT listener, you made it this far and you didn't know, congratulations. You know now. Go get some chicken from Al Horford. It's at 1 o'clock p.m. Hell yeah.
Awesome. Al Horford is like the perfect Celtic. All right. My nuff said it's kind of all Boston teams. I actually got this from Red Sox Stats. I don't know where he got this from. He, she, or they. We don't even know who Red Sox Stats is. Just a mythical creature in this space. But listen to this statistic. This is nuts. Since the year 2000, 26% of all players who have played on the Red Sox, Patriots, Celtics, or Bruins have at least one championship ring from their time here. That is batshit crazy. We are so spoiled as Boston sports fans. And I think the best part about it, there's the tweet, beautiful. I think Billy Joel Hanrahan is the first comment. I think the craziest, the best part about like being in our age group, jokes aside, I'm not actually 90, contrary to what these guys say. I'm 29. But being in this, like, I guess you could say 21 to, like, what, like 35-year-old age group as a Bostonian or as New Englander in general, it never gets old. Like, this Celtics championship felt just as exciting as every Patriots championship, every Red Sox one other than 2004, because that was crazy, and then the Bruins in 2011. It never gets old, and we are so lucky and so fortunate. I hope we all recognize that. There's going to probably come a time where there's an actual drought, not like a five-year drought where we're like joking about, oh no, we haven't won in so long. We're so rich. So let's just make sure we all appreciate it. And you got the friggin' Red Sox trending upwards. The Bruins have a ton of cap space, a lot of draft picks, a big trade piece in Olmark. The Celtics have their whole team locked up. So there might be some more championships coming. Let's just make sure we appreciate it. But
Sammy, going back to, you said there may be like, there will be a drought at some point. There hasn't been ever. The longest has been 15 years since all four teams existed.
That's what, and I mean. Is, like a 10 year drought where
it's a long drought when you not for one team but for all, if you count all four, what constitutes a long drought?
I think because, 10 years if you're sitting.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
I have to be quiet because my girlfriend's from Seattle and she's in the other room and they've only won one championship ever and I don't want to get killed. So
I am 25 years old. This just ended the longest drought of my life, and it was 5 years.
Same, dude. Same with my dad, who's in his 60s. Same, I think, other than like my grandmother, who's in her 90s, pretty much everybody, this is the longest drought that they've ever.
What about
ever
the 90s?
Wasn't no, the longest drought was 86 to 2001. That was 15 years.
That was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was late. Okay, fine. Fuck. Well, fuck. This ruins my whole take then, but still. You get the point.
I have friends from college, like New York sports fans. Like one of them has literally never seen any of his teams win a title. One of them has like only seen one. Like, and this is like New York sports. Like, it's not just like a Northeast. Like, it's not just like they're, oh, we're in the middle of America and like our teams don't spend any money. It's like, no, like a lot of people have not seen their teams win much, if at all. And we just, this was the 13th championship that I've seen in my life.
Yep.
Yeah. Boston, Bay Area, Chicago, I feel like, are the cities, and I guess you could throw Pittsburgh in there too.
They don't even have
keep celebrating, you younger millennials and older Gen Zs. Like,
I mean, we gotta tell. I still remember being a little kid, and we were at like the supermarket. It was after the Patriots won their third Super Bowl, and I asked my mom some question about like football, and she had to explain to me like, no, Sam, the Patriots don't win every year. You've just seen it three of the last 4 years, and you're like 6 years old, so you think that they already win. But yeah, man, we're super fortunate. I was just talking today to my friend about how I hate when one of the teams in Boston wins a championship, and then the championship T-shirt isn't that cool. He was like, "Dude, we're such assholes, man. Like so glad the Celtics won. Parade on Friday.
It is a great." Great time to be a Boston sports fan once again. Like, things are great. Life is good right now. The Sox have won 8 out of 10. The Celtics are champs. The weather is beautiful. It is June, which is unequivocally one of the best months of the year, if not the best month of the year. Just
this is a challenge flag. This weather sucks, dude. It was 93 with 51% humidity the other day. I walk out. I'm glistening right now. I'm inside and there's air conditioning. I'm glistening like a pig. Like I like it in like September when it's like low 70s, less humid.
But the issue is, if you're in September, that means you're on like the borderline. It's about to start getting cold, and I hate it. It's about to get going. Like, beginning. But either way, the heat wave will be over in time for the parade. The winning is Boston is back. The Celtics are champs. Everything is awesome. So let's just keep this momentum going. The Sox, you got an off day on Thursday, but you got a 3-game series against the Reds this weekend, a beautiful opportunity to continue momentum against a team that, yes, they're not like a real last place team. They are in last, but they're not completely terrible. They're just a little bit below average. But an opportunity to win some games here. You're not facing their best guys. So let's get 2 out of 3 at least here and keep it rolling. But till next time, till you hear from us next, before that, before you leave, subscribe. Hit the subscribe button. Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app. Hit that subscribe button and rate us 5 stars. It helps us out a ton. Check it out on YouTube. We're on the WEI channel. We've got our own playlist, the Play Tessie playlist. So hit the thumbs up on that video and make sure to follow us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. But for Sammy, for Pat, for Joe in the back, it's Gordo here for Play Tessie. Guys, the socks are hot, so let's just keep it going. Thanks for tuning in. Till next time, toodaloo.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.